I have, he corrected himself, a policy on traps. Chapter 19, The Face of the Sith. Mustafar burned with lava streaming from volcanoes of glittering obsidian. At the fringe of its gravity well, a spray of prismatic starlight warped a starfighter into existence. Declamping from its hyperdrive ring, the starfighter streaked into an atmosphere choked with dense smoke and cinders. The starfighter followed a pre-programmed course toward the planet's lone installation, an automated lava mine built originally by the Techno Union to draw precious metals from the continuous rivers of burning stone. Upgraded with the finest mechanized defenses that money could buy, the settlement had become the final redoubt of the leaders of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. It was absolutely impenetrable. Unless one had its deactivation codes, which was how the starfighter could land without causing the installation's defenses to so much as stir. The habitable areas of the settlement were spread among towers that looked like poisonous toadstools sprung from the bank of a river of fire. The main control center squatted atop the largest, beside the small landing deck where the starfighter had alit. It was from this control center, less than an hour before, that a coded command had been transmitted over every holonet repeater in the galaxy. At that signal, every combat droid in every army on every planet marched back to its transport, resocketed itself, and turned itself off. The Clone Wars were over. Almost. There was a final detail. A dark cloaked figure swung down from the cockpit of the starfighter. Bail Organa strode into the Tantive's shuttle deck to find Obi-Wan and Yoda gazing dubiously at the tiny cockpit of Obi-Wan's starfighter. I suppose, Obi-Wan was saying reluctantly, if you don't mind riding on my lap. That may not be necessary, Bail said. I've just been summoned back to Coruscant by Mas Amida. Palpatine has called the Senate into extraordinary session. Attendance is required. Ah. Obi-Wan's mouth turned downward. It's clear what this will be about. I am, Bail said slowly, concerned it might be a trap. Unlikely this is! Yoda hobbled toward him. Unknown is the purpose of your sudden departure from the capital. Dead, young Obi-Wan and I are both presumed to be. And Palpatine won't be moving against the Senate as a whole, Obi-Wan added. At least not yet. He'll need the illusion of democracy to keep the individual star systems in line. He won't risk a general uprising. Bail nodded. In that case, he took a deep breath. Perhaps I can offer your graces a lift. Inside the control center of the separatist bunker on Mustafar, Wat Tambor was adjusting the gas mix inside his armor. Poggle the Lesser was massaging his fleshy lip tendrils. Shumai was fiddling with the brass binding that restrained her hair into the stylish, curving horn that rose behind her head. San Hill was stretching his body stocking, which had begun to ride up in the crotch. Rune Ha'ako was shifting his weight nervously from foot to foot, while Newt Gunray spoke to the hollow presence of Darth Sidious.
The plan has gone exactly as you promised, my lord, Gunray said. This is a glorious day for the galaxy.
Yes, indeed. Thanks in great part to you, Viceroy, and to your associates of the Techno Union and the IBC, and, of course, Archduke Poggle. You have all performed magnificently. Have your droid armies completed shutdown?
Yes, my lord. Nearly an hour ago.
Excellent. You will be handsomely rewarded. Has my new apprentice, Darth Vader, arrived?
His ship touched down only a moment ago.
Good. Good.
The holoscan of the cloaked man said pleasantly,
I have left your reward in his hands. He will take care of you.
The door cycled open. A tall, cloaked figure, slim but broad-shouldered, face shadowed by a heavy hood, stood in the doorway. San Hill beat the others to the greeting.
Welcome, Lord Vader.
His elongated legs almost tangled with each other in his rush to shake the hand of the Sith Lord.
On behalf of the leadership of the Confederacy of Independent Systems, let me be the first to...
Very well. You will be the first. The cloaked figure stepped inside and made a gesture with a black-gloved hand. Blast doors slammed across every exit. The control panel exploded in a shower of sparking wires. The cloaked figure threw back its hood. San Hill recoiled, hands flapping like panicked birds sewn to his wrists. He had time to gasp,
You're Anakin Skywalker!
Before a fountain of blue-white plasma burned into his chest, curving through a loop that charred all three of his hearts. The Separatist leadership watched in frozen horror as the corpse of the head of the Intergalactic Banking Clan collapsed like a depowered protocol droid. The resemblance, Darth Vader said, is deceptive. The Senate guard blinked, then straightened and smoothed the drape of his robe. He risked a glance at his partner, who flanked the opposite side of the door. Had they really just gotten as lucky as he thought they had? Were this senator and his aides really walking right out of the turbo lift with a couple of as yet uncaptured Jedi? Wow, promotions all around. The guard tried not to stare at the two Jedi and did his best to sound professional. Welcome back, Senator. May I see your clearance? An identichip was produced without hesitation. Bail Organa, senior senator from Alderaan. Thank you. You may proceed. The guard handed back the identichip. He was rather pleased with how steady and businesslike he sounded. We will take custody of the Jedi. Then the taller of the two Jedi murmured gently that it would be better if he and his counterpart were to stay with the senator. And really, he seemed like such a reasonable fellow, and it was such a good idea. After all, the Grand Convocation Chamber of the Galactic Senate was so secure, there was really no way for a Jedi to cause any trouble for anyone, and they could just as easily be apprehended on their way out. And the guard didn't want to seem like an unreasonable fellow himself, and so he found himself nodding and agreeing that yes, indeed, it would be better if the Jedi stayed with the senator. And everyone was so reasonable and agreeable that it seemed perfectly reasonable and agreeable to the guard that the Jedi and the senator, instead of staying together as they'd said, made low-voiced, "Force be with you" farewells. It never occurred to the guard to object, even when the senator entered the convocation chamber and the two Jedi headed off for, well, apparently, somewhere else. All eight members of Decoy Squad 5 were deployed at a down-level loading dock, where supplies that Jedi could not grow in their own temple gardens had been delivered daily. Not anymore. This deep in Coruscant's down-levels, the sun never shone. The only illumination came from antiquated glow globes, their faded light, yellow as ancient parchment, that only darkened the shadows around. In those shadows lived the dregs of the galaxy. Squatters and scavengers, madmen and fugitives from the justice above. Parts of Coruscant's down-levels could be worse than Nar Shaddaa. The men of Decoy Squad 5 would have been alert on any post. They were bred to be. Here, though, they were in a combat zone, where their lives and their missions depended on their perceptions, and on how fast their blasters could come out from inside those Jedi-style robes. So when a ragged, drooling hunchback lurched out of the gloom nearby, a bundle cradled in his arms, Decoy Squad 5 took it for granted that he was a threat. Blasters appeared with miraculous speed. Halt! Identify yourself.
No, your graces. Oh, no. I'm being here to help, you see. I'm on your side.
The hunchback slurped drool back into his slack lips as he lurched toward them.
Look what I got here. I mean, look it. It's a Jedi babby, ain't it?
The sergeant of the squad squinted at the bundle in the hunchback's arms. A Jedi baby?
Oh, sure. Sure, your grace. Jedi babby.
Sure as hell it is. Come from out your temple, didn't it? Look it.
The hunchback was now close enough that the sergeant could see what he carried in his filthy bundle. It was a baby. Sort of. It was the ugliest baby the sergeant had ever seen, alien or not, wizened and shriveled like a worn-out purse of moldy leather, with great pop eyes and the toothless idiot's grin. The sergeant frowned skeptically.
Anyone could grab some deformed kid and claim it's anything they want. How do you know it's a Jedi?
The baby said,
My lightsaber. The first clue would be.
A burning blade of green slanted across the sergeant's face so close he could smell the ozone, and the hunchback wasn't a hunchback anymore. He now held the lightsaber the color of a summer sky, and he said in a clipped, educated, Coruscanti accent, Please don't try to resist. No one has to get hurt. The men of Decoy Squad 5 disagreed. 6 seconds later, all eight of them were dead. Yoda looked up at Obi-Wan.
To hide the bodies, no point there is.
Obi-Wan nodded agreement. These are clones. An abandoned post is as much a giveaway as a pile of corpses. Let's get to that beacon. Bail slipped into the rear of the Naboo delegation Senate pod as Palpatine thundered from the podium.
These Jedi murderers left me scarred, left me deformed, but they could not scar my integrity. They could not deform my resolve. The remaining traitors will be hunted down, rooted out wherever they may hide, and brought to justice, dead or alive. All collaborators will suffer the same fate. Those who protect the enemy are the enemy. Now is the time. Now we will strike back. Now we will destroy the destroyers. Death to the enemies of democracy.
The Senate roared. Amidala didn't even glance at Bail as he slid into a seat beside her. On the opposite side, Representative Binks nodded at him, but said nothing, blinking solemnly. Bail frowned. Even if the irrepressible Jar Jar was worried, this looked to be even worse than he'd expected. And he had expected it to be very, very bad. He touched Amidala's arm softly. It's all a lie. You know that, don't you? She stared frozenly toward the podium. Her eyes glistened with unshed tears. I don't know what I know. Not anymore. Where have you been?
I was held up.
As she once had told him, some things were better left unsaid. He's been presenting evidence all afternoon, she said in a flat, effectless monotone. Not just the assassination attempt. The Jedi were about to overthrow the Senate.
It's a lie, he said again.
In the center of the Grand Convocation Chamber, Palpatine leaned upon the Chancellor's podium as though he drew strength from the Great Seal on its front.
This has been the most trying of times, but we have passed the test. The war is over!
The Senate roared.
The Separatists have been utterly defeated, and the Republic will stand united! United and free!
The Senate roared.
The Jedi Rebellion was our final test. It was the last gasp of the forces of darkness. Now we have left that darkness behind us forever, and the new day has begun. It is morning in the Republic.
The Senate roared. Padme stared without blinking. Here it comes, she said numbly.
Bail shook his head. Hear what comes?
You'll see.
Never again will we be divided. Never again will sector turn against sector, planet turn against planet, sibling turn against sibling. We are one nation, indivisible.
The Senate roared.
To ensure that we will always stand together, that we will always speak with a single voice and act with a single hand, the Republic must change. We must evolve. We must grow. We have become an empire, in fact. Let us become an empire in name as well. We are the First Galactic Empire.
The Senate went wild. What are they doing? Bail said. Do they understand what they're cheering for? Padme shook her head.
We are an empire, Palpatine went on, that will continue to be ruled by this august body. We are an empire that will never return to the political maneuvering and corruption that have wounded us so deeply. We are an empire that will be directed by a single sovereign, chosen for life.
The Senate went wilder.
We are an empire ruled by the majority. An empire ruled by a new constitution. An empire of laws, not of politicians. An empire devoted to the preservation of a just society, of a safe and secure society. We are an empire that will stand 10,000 years.
The roar of the Senate took on a continuous boiling roll like the inside of a permanent thunderstorm.
We will celebrate the anniversary of this day as Empire Day for the sake of our children, for our children's children, for the next 10,000 years. Safety, security, justice, and peace.
The Senate went berserk.
Say it with me. Safety, security, justice, and peace. Safety, security, justice, and peace.
The Senate took up the chant, louder and louder until it seemed the whole galaxy roared along. Bail couldn't hear Padme over the din, but he could read her lips. So this is how liberty dies, she was saying to herself, with cheering and applause. We can't let this happen. Bail lurched to his feet. I have to get my pod. We can still enter a motion. No! Her hand seized his arm with astonishing strength, and for the first time since he arrived, she looked straight into his eyes. No, Bail. You can't enter a motion. You can't! Fang Zar has already been arrested, and Tundra Domei, and it won't be long until the entire delegation of the 2,000 are declared enemies of the state. You stayed off that list for good reason. Don't add your name by what you do today.
But I can't just stand by and watch.
You're right. You can't just watch. You have to vote for him.
What?
Bail, it's the only way. It's the only hope you have of remaining in a position to do anyone any good. Vote for Palpatine. Vote for the Empire. Make Mon Mothma vote for him too. Be good little senators. Mind your manners and keep your heads down. And keep doing all those things we can't talk about. All those things I can't know. Promise me, Bail. Padme, what you're talking about, what we're not talking about, it could take 20 years. Are you under suspicion? What are you going to do? Don't worry about me, she said distantly. I don't know I'll live that long. Within the Separatist Leadership Bunker's control center were dozens of combat droids. There were armed and armored guards. There were automated defense systems. There were screams and tears and pleas for mercy. None of them mattered. The Sith had come to Mustafar. Poggle the Lesser, Archduke of Geonosis, scrambled like an animal through a litter of severed arms and legs and heads, both metal and flesh, whimpering, fluttering his ancient gauzy wings until a bar of lightning flash-burned his own head free of his neck. Shumai, president and CEO of the Commerce Guild, looked up from her knees, hands clasped before her, tears streaming down her shriveled cheeks.
We were promised a reward, she gasped. A handsome reward.
I am your reward, the Sith Lord said. You don't find me handsome.
Please,
she screeched through her sobbing.
Please!
The blue-white blade cut into and out from her skull, and her corpse swayed. A negligent flip of the wrist flashed through her column of neck rings. Her brain-burned head tumbled to the floor. The only sound then was the panicky stutter of footfalls as Wat Tambor and the two Nymordians scampered along a hallway toward a nearby conference room. The Sith Lord was in no hurry to pursue. All the exits from the control center were blast shielded, and they were sealed, and he had destroyed the controls. The conference room was, as the expression goes, a dead end. Thousands of clone troops swarmed the Jedi Temple. Multiple battalions on each level were not just an occupying force, but engaged in the long, painstaking process of preparing dead bodies for positive identification. The Jedi dead were to be tallied against the rolls maintained in the temple archives. The clone dead would be cross-checked with regimental rosters. All the dead had to be accounted for. This was turning out to be somewhat more complicated than the clone officers had expected. Though the fighting had ended hours ago, troopers kept turning up missing. Usually small patrolling squads, 5 troopers or less, that still made random sweeps through the temple hallways, checking every door and window, every desk and every closet. Sometimes when those closets were opened, what was found inside was 5 dead clones. And there were disturbing reports as well. Officers coordinating the sweeps recorded a string of sightings of movement, usually a flash of robe disappearing around a corner, caught in a trooper's peripheral vision, that on investigation seemed to have been only imagination or hallucination. There were also multiple reports of inexplicable sounds coming from out-of-the-way areas that turned out to be deserted. Though clone troopers were schooled from even before awakening in their Kaminoan creche schools to be ruthlessly pragmatic, materialistic, and completely impervious to superstition, some of them began to suspect that the temple might be haunted. In the vast misty gloom of the Room of 1,000 Fountains, one of the clones on the cleanup squad caught a glimpse of someone moving beyond a stand of Hylian marsh bamboo.
"Halt!" he shouted. "You there! Don't move!"
The shadowy figure darted off into the gloom, and the clone turned to his squad brothers.
"Come on! Whatever that was, we can't let it get away!"
Clones pelted off into the mist. Behind them, at the spill of bodies they'd been working on, fog and gloom gave birth to a pair of Jedi Masters. Obi-Wan stepped over white-armored bodies to kneel beside blaster-burned corpses of children. Tears flowed freely down tracks that hadn't had a chance to dry since he'd first entered the temple. Not even the younglings survived. It looks like they made a stand here. Yoda's face creased with ancient sadness.
"Or trying to flee they were, with some turning back to slow the pursuit."
Obi-Wan turned to another body, an older one, a Jedi fully mature and beyond. Grief punched a gasp from his chest.
"Master Yoda, it's the troll."
Yoda looked over and nodded bleakly.
"Abandon his young students, Sindralig would not."
Obi-Wan sank to his knees beside the fallen Jedi. "He was my lightsaber instructor."
"And his was I," Yoda said. "Cripple us, grief will, if let it we do."
"I know, but it's one thing to know a friend is dead, Master Yoda. It's another to find his body."
"Yes."
Yoda moved closer. With his gimmer stick, he pointed at a bloodless gash in Drawleek's shoulder that had cloven deep into his chest.
"Yes, it is. See this, do you? This wound no blaster could make."
An icy void opened in Obi-Wan's heart. It swallowed his pain and his grief, leaving behind a precariously empty calm. He whispered, "A lightsaber."
"Business with the recall beacon have we still."
Yoda pointed with his stick at figures winding toward them among the trees and pools.
"Returning the clones are."
Obi-Wan rose. "I will learn who did this."
"Learn?"
Yoda shook his head sadly.
"No, already you do,"
he said, and hobbled off into the gloom. Darth Vader left nothing living behind when he walked from the main room of the control center. Casually, carelessly, he strode along the hallway, scoring the durasteel wall with the tip of his blade, enjoying the sizzle of disintegrating metal as he had savored the smoke of charred alien flesh. The conference room door was closed. A barrier so paltry would be an insult to the blade. A black-gloved hand made a fist. The door crumpled and fell. The Sith Lord stepped over it. The conference room was walled with transparasteel. Beyond, obsidian mountains rained fire upon the land. Rivers of lava embraced the settlement. Rune Ha'ako, aide and confidential secretary to the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, tripped over a chair as he stumbled back. He fell to the floor, shaking like a grub in a frying pan, trying to scrabble beneath the table.
"Stop!" he cried. "Enough! We surrender! Do you understand? You can't just kill us!"
The Sith Lord smiled. "Can't I?"
"We're unarmed! We surrender! Please! Please! You're a Jedi!"
"You fought a war to destroy the Jedi." Vader stood above the shivering Nymoidian, smiling down upon him, then fed him half a meter of plasma. "Congratulations on your success." The Sith Lord stepped over Ha'ako's corpse to where Wat Tambor clawed uselessly at the transparasteel wall with his armored gauntlets. The head of the Techno Union turned at his approach, cringing, arms lifted to shield his faceplate from the flames in the dragon's eyes.
"Please, I'll give you anything, anything you want."
The blade flashed twice. Tambor's arms fell to the floor, followed by his head. "Thank you." Darth Vader turned to the last living leader of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Newt Gunray, Viceroy of the Trade Federation, stood trembling in an alcove, blood-tinged tears streaming down his green mottled cheeks.
"The war," he whimpered. "The war is over. Lord Sidious promised. He promised we would be left in peace."
His transmission was garbled. The blade came up. "He promised you would be left in pieces." In the main holocom center of the Jedi Temple, high atop the central spire, Obi-Wan used the Force to reach deep within the shell of the recall beacon's mechanism, subtly altering the pulse calibration to flip the signal from "come home" to "run and hide." Done without any visible alteration, it would take the troopers quite a while to detect the recalibration, and longer still to reset it. This was all that could be done for any surviving Jedi. A warning, to give them a fighting chance. Obi-Wan turned from the recall beacon to the internal security scans. He had to find out exactly what he was warning them against.
"Do this not," Yoda said. "Leave we must, before discovered we are."
"I have to see it," Obi-Wan said grimly. "Like I said downstairs, knowing is one thing, seeing is another."
"Seeing will only cause you pain."
"Then it is pain that I have earned. I won't hide from it." He keyed a code that brought up a holoscan of the Room of 1,000 Fountains. "I am not afraid." Yoda's eyes narrowed to green gold slits.
"You should be."
Stone-faced, Obi-Wan watched younglings run into the room, fleeing a storm of blaster fire. He watched Sin Dralig and a pair of teenage Padawans. Was that we? The boy Yoda had brought to Vijun. Backing into the scene, blades whirling, cutting down the advancing clone troopers with deflected bolts. He watched a lightsaber blade flick into the shot, cutting down first one Padawan, then the other. He watched the brisk stride of a caped figure who hacked through Dralig's shoulder, then stood aside as the old troll fell dying to let the rest of the clones blast the children to shreds. Obi-Wan's expression never flickered. He opened himself to what he was about to see. He was prepared and centered and trusting in the Force. And yet... Then the caped man turned to meet a cloaked figure behind him. And he was... He was... Obi-Wan, staring, wished that he had the strength to rip his eyes out of his head. But even blind, he would see this forever. He would see his friend, his student, his brother, turn and kneel in front of a black-cloaked Lord of the Sith. His head rang with a silent scream. "The traitors have been destroyed, Lord Sidious, and the archives are secured. Our ancient holocrons are again in the hands of the Sith."
"Good, good. Together we shall master every secret of the Force."
The Sith Lord purred like a contented rancor.
"You have done well, my new apprentice. Do you feel your power growing?"
"Yes, my master."
"Lord Vader, your skills are unmatched by any Sith before you. Go forth, my boy. Go forth and bring peace to our empire."
Fumbling nervelessly, Obi-Wan somehow managed to shut down the holoscan. He leaned on the console, but his arms would not support him. They buckled, and he twisted to the floor. He huddled against the console, blind with pain. Yoda was as sympathetic as the root of a rosher tree.
"Warned you were,"
Obi-Wan said. "I should have let them shoot me."
"What?"
"No, that was already too late. It was already too late at Geonosis. The Zabrak on Naboo. I should have died there, before I ever brought him here."
"Stop this, you will!"
Yoda gave him a stick jab in the ribs, sharp enough to straighten him up.
"Make a Jedi fall one cannot. Beyond even Lord Sidious this is. Chose this, Skywalker did."
Obi-Wan lowered his head, and I'm afraid I might know why.
"Why? Why matters not. There is no why. There is only a Lord of the Sith and his apprentice. Two Sith."
Yoda leaned close.
"And two Jedi."
Obi-Wan nodded, but he still couldn't meet the gaze of the ancient master. "I'll take Palpatine."
"Strong enough to face Lord Sidious, you will never be. Die you will, and painfully."
"Don't make me kill Anakin," he said. "He's like my brother, master."
"The boy you trained, gone he is. Twisted by the dark side. Consumed by Darth Vader. Out of this misery you must put him. To visit our new emperor, my job will be."
Now Obi-Wan did face him. Palpatine faced Mace and Ajin and Kit and Saisi, four of the greatest swordsmen our order has ever produced. By himself. Even both of us together wouldn't have a chance.
"True,"
Yoda said.
"But both of us apart, a chance we might create."
Chapter 20. Chiaroscuro. C-3PO identified the craft docking on the veranda as a DC-0052 intergalactic speeder. To be on the safe side, he left the security curtain engaged. In these troubled times, safety outweighed courtesy, even for him. A cloaked and hooded human male emerged from the DC-0052 and approached the Veil of Energy. C-3PO moved to meet him.
"Hello, may I help you?"
The human lifted his hands to his hood. Instead of taking it down, he folded it back far enough that C-3PO could register the distinctive relationship of eyes, nose, mouth, and beard.
"Master Kenobi!"
C-3PO had long ago been given detailed and quite specific instructions on the procedure for dealing with the unexpected arrival of furtive Jedi. He instantly deactivated the security curtain and beckoned.
"Come inside, quickly. You may be seen."
As C-3PO swiftly ushered him into the sitting room, Master Kenobi asked, "Has Anakin been here?"
"Yes,"
C-3PO said reluctantly.
"He arrived shortly after he and the army saved the Republic from the Jedi Rebellion."
He cut himself off when he noticed that Master Kenobi suddenly looked fully prepared to dismantle him bolt by bolt. Perhaps he should not have been so quick to let the Jedi in.
Wasn't he some sort of outlaw now?
I should...
C-3PO stammered, backing away.
I'll just go get the Senator, shall I? She's been lying down. After the Grand Convocation this morning, she didn't feel entirely well, and so...
The Senator appeared at the top of the curving stairway, belting a soft robe over her dressing gown, and C-3PO decided his most appropriate course of action would be to discreetly withdraw. But not too far. If Master Kenobi was up to mischief, C-3PO had to be in a position to alert Captain Typho and the security staff on the spot. Senator Amidala certainly didn't seem inclined to treat Master Kenobi as a dangerous outlaw. Quite the contrary, in fact. She seemed to have fallen into his arms, and her voice was thoroughly choked with emotion as she expressed a possibly inappropriate level of joy at finding the Jedi still alive. There followed some discussion that C-3PO didn't entirely understand. It was political information, entirely outside his programming, having to do with Master Anakin and the Republic having fallen, whatever that meant, and with something called a Sith Lord, and Chancellor Palpatine, and the dark side of the Force, and really he couldn't make sense of any of it. The only parts he clearly understood had to do with the Jedi Order being outlawed and all but wiped out. That news had been all over the Lipartian Way this morning, and the not altogether unexpected revelation that Master Kenobi had come here seeking Master Anakin. They were partners after all, though, despite all their years together, Master Anakin's recent behavior made it sadly clear that Master Kenobi's lovely manners had entirely failed to rub off. "When was the last time you saw him? Do you know where he is?" C-3PO's photoreceptors registered the Senator's flush as she lowered her eyes and said, "No." 3 years running the household of a career politician stopped C-3PO from popping back out and reminding the Senator that Master Anakin had told her just yesterday that he was on his way to Mustafar. He knew very well that the Senator's memory failed only when she decided it should. "Padme, you must help me," Master Kenobi said. "Anakin must be found. He must be stopped." "How can you say that?" She pulled back from him and turned away, folding her arms over the curve of her belly. "He's just won the war!" The war was never the Republic against the Separatists. It was Palpatine against the Jedi. We lost. The rest of it was just play-acting. It was real enough for everyone who died. "Yes." Now it was Master Kenobi's turn to lower his eyes, including the children at the temple. "What?" "They were murdered, Padme. I saw it." He took her shoulders and turned her back to face him. "They were murdered by Anakin." "It's a lie." She pushed him away, forcefully enough that C-3PO nearly triggered the security alert then and there. But Master Kenobi only regarded her with an expression that matched C-3PO's internal recognition files of sadness and pity. "He could never. He could never. Not my Anakin." Master Kenobi's voice was soft and slow. "He must be found." Her reply was even softer. C-3PO's oral sensor barely recorded it at all. "You've decided to kill him." Master Kenobi said gravely, "He has become a very great threat." At this, the Senator's medical condition seemed to finally overcome her. Her knees buckled, and Master Kenobi was forced to catch her and help her onto the sofa. Apparently, Master Kenobi knew somewhat more about human physiology than did C-3PO. Though his photoreceptors hadn't been dark to the ongoing changes in Senator Amidala's contour, C-3PO had no idea what they might signify. At any rate, Master Kenobi seemed to comprehend the situation instantly. He settled her comfortably onto the sofa and stood frowning down at her. "Anakin is the father, isn't he?" The Senator looked away. Her eyes were leaking again. The Jedi Master said, hushed, "I'm very sorry, Padme. If it could be different, go away, Obi-Wan. I won't help you. I can't." She turned her face away. "I won't help you kill him." Master Kenobi said again, "I'm very sorry," and left. C-3PO tentatively returned to the sitting room, intending to inquire after the senator's health. But before he could access a sufficiently delicate phrase to open the discussion, the senator said softly, "3PO, do you know what this is?" She lifted toward him the pendant that hung from the cord of gerbil leather she always wore around her neck.
"Why, yes, my lady,"
the protocol droid replied, bemused but happy as always to be of service.
"It's a snippet of Jarpor. Younglings on Tatooine carve tribal runes into them to make amulets. They are supposed by superstitious folk to bring good fortune and protect one from harm, and sometimes are thought to be love charms. I must say, my lady, I'm quite surprised you've forgotten, seeing as how you've worn that one ever since it was given to you so many years ago by Master Anne."
"I hadn't forgotten what it was, 3PO," she said distantly. "Thank you. I was reminding myself of the boy who gave it to me."
"My lady?"
If she hadn't forgotten, why would she ask? Before C-3PO could phrase a properly courteous interrogative, she said, "Contact Captain Typho. Have him ready my skiff."
"My lady, are you going somewhere?"
"We are," she said. "We're going to Mustafar." From the shadows beneath the mirror-polished skiff's landing ramp, Obi-Wan Kenobi watched Captain Typho try to talk her out of it.
"My lady," the Naboo security chief protested, "at least let me come with you."
"Thank you, Captain, but there's no need," Padme said distantly. "The war's over, and this is a personal errand. And, Captain, it must remain personal, do you understand? You know nothing of my leaving, nor where I am bound, nor when I can be expected to return."
"As you wish, my lady," Typho said, with a reluctant bow. "But I strongly disagree with this decision."
"I'll be fine, Captain. After all, I have 3PO to look after me."
Obi-Wan could clearly hear the droids murmured,
"Oh, dear."
After Typho finally climbed into his speeder and took off, Padme and her droid boarded the skiff. She wasted no time at all. The skiff's repulsor lifts engaged before the landing ramp had even retracted. Obi-Wan had to jump for it. He swung inside just as the hatch sealed itself and the gleaming starship leapt for the sky.
Darth Vader stood in the command bridge of the Mustafar Control Center, hand of durasteel clasping hand of flesh behind him, and gazed up through the transparasteel view wall at the galaxy he would one day rule. He paid no attention to the litter of corpses around his feet. He could feel his power growing, indeed. He had the measure of his master already. Not long after Palpatine shared the secret of Darth Plagueis' discovery, their relationship would undergo a sudden transformation, a fatal transformation. Everything was proceeding according to plan, and yet he couldn't shake a certain creeping sensation, a kind of cold, slimy ooze that slithered up the veins of his legs and spread clammy tendrils through his guts, almost as though he was still afraid. "She will die, you know," the dragon whispered. He shook himself, scowling. Impossible. He was Darth Vader. Fear had no power over him. He had destroyed his fear. "All things die." Yet it was as though, when he had crushed the dragon under his boot, the dragon had sunk venomed fangs into his heel. Now its poison chilled him to the bone. "Even stars burn out." He shook himself again and strode toward the holocom. He would talk to his master. Palpatine had always helped him keep the dragon down. A comlink chimed. Yoda opened his eyes in the darkness.
"Yes, Master Kenobi?"
"We're landing now. Are you in position?"
"I am."
A moment of silence.
"Master Yoda, if we don't see each other again..."
"Think not of after, Obi-Wan. Always now, even eternity will be."
Another moment of silence. Longer.
"May the Force be with you."
"It is. And may the Force be with you, young Obi-Wan.
The transmission ended. Yoda rose. A gesture opened the grating of the vent shaft where he had waited in meditation, revealing the vast conic well that was the Grand Convocation Chamber of the Galactic Senate. It was sometimes called the Senate Arena. Today, this nickname would be particularly apt. Yoda stretched blood back into his green flesh. This was his time. 900 years of study and training, of teaching and of meditation, all now focused and refined and resolved into the single moment. The sole purpose of his vast span of existence had been to prepare him to enter the heart of night and bring his light against the darkness. He adjusted the angle of his blade against his belt. He draped his robe across his shoulders. With reverence, with gratitude, without fear, and without anger, Yoda went forth to war. A silvery flash outside caught Darth Vader's eye, as though an elegantly curved mirror swung through the smoke and cinders, picking up the shine of white-hot lava. From one knee, he could look right through the holoscan of his master while he continued his report. He was no longer afraid. He was too busy pretending to be respectful. The Separatist leadership is no more, my master.
It is finished, then.
The image offered a translucent mockery of a smile.
You have restored peace and justice to the galaxy, Lord Vader.
That is my sole ambition, Master. The image tilted its head, its smile twisting without transition to a scowl.
Lord Vader, I sense a disturbance in the Force. You may be in danger.
He glanced at the mirror flash outside. He knew that ship. In danger of being kissed to death, perhaps. How should I be in danger, Master?
I cannot say, but the danger is real. Be mindful.
Be mindful. Be mindful, he thought with a mental sneer. Is that the best you can do? I could get that much from Obi-Wan. I will, my master. Thank you. The image faded. He got to his feet, and now the sneer was on his lips and in his eyes. You're the one who should be mindful, my master. I am a disturbance in the Force. Outside, the sleek skiff settled to the deck. He spent a moment reassembling his Anakin Skywalker face. He let Anakin Skywalker's love flow through him. Let Anakin Skywalker's glad smile come to his lips. Let Anakin Skywalker's youthful energy bring a joyous bounce to his step as he trotted to the entrance over the mess of corpses and severed body parts. He'd meet her outside, and he'd keep her outside. He had a feeling she wouldn't approve of the way he had redecorated the control center. And after all, he thought, with a mental shrug, there's no arguing taste. The holding office of the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic comprised the nether vertex of the Senate Arena. It was little more than a circular preparations area, a green room where guests of the Chancellor might be entertained before entering the Senate podium. The circular pod on its immense hydraulic pillar, which contained controls that coordinated the movement of floating Senate delegation pods and rising into the focal point of the chamber above. Above that podium, the vast hollow presence of a kneeling Sith bowed before a shadow that stood below. Guards in scarlet flanked the shadow. A Shagreean toady cringed nearby. But the danger is real. Be mindful.
I will, my master. Thank you.
The hollow presence faded, and where its huge translucency had knelt was now revealed another presence. A physical presence, tiny and aged, clad in robes and leaning on a twist of wood. But his physical presence was an illusion. The truth of him could be seen only in the Force. In the Force, he was a fountain of light.
Pity your new disciple, I do. So lately an apprentice, so soon without a master.
Why, Master Yoda, what a delightful surprise. Welcome.
The voice of the shadow hummed with anticipation.
Let me be the first to wish you Happy Empire Day.
Find it happy you will not, nor will the murderer you call Vader.
Ah.
The shadow stepped closer to the light.
So that is the threat I felt. Who is it, if I may ask? Who have you sent to kill him?
Enough it is that you know your own destroyer.
Oh, pish, Master Yoda. It wouldn't be Kenobi, would it? Please say it's Kenobi. Lord Vader gets such a thrill from killing people who care for him.
Behind the shadow, some meters away, Mas Amida, the Shagreean toady who was Speaker of the Galactic Senate, heard a whisper in Palpatine's voice.
Flee.
He did. Neither light nor shadow gave his exit a glance.
So easily slain, Obi-Wan is not.
Neither are you, apparently. But that is about to change.
The shadow took another step, and another. A lightsaber appeared, green as sunlight in a forest.
The test of that today will be.
Even a fraction of the dark side is more power than your Jedi arrogance can conceive. Living in the light, you have never seen the depth of the darkness.
The shadow spread arms that made its sleeves into black wings.
Until now.
Lightning speared from outstretched hands, and the battle was on. Padme stumbled down the landing ramp into Anakin's arms. Her eyes were raw and numb. Once inside the ship, her emotional control had finally shattered, and she had sobbed the whole way there, crying from relentless, mind-shredding dread. And so her lips were swollen, and her whole body shook, and she was just so grateful, so incredibly grateful, that again she flooded with fresh tears. Grateful that he was alive. Grateful that he'd come bounding across the landing deck to meet her. That he was still strong and beautiful. That his arms still were warm around her, and his lips were soft against her hair. Anakin, my Anakin. She shivered against his chest. I've been so frightened. Shh. Shh. It's all right. He stroked her hair until her trembling began to fade. Then he cupped her chin and gently raised her face to look into his eyes. You never need to worry about me. Didn't you understand? No one can hurt me. No one will ever hurt either of us. It wasn't that, my love. It was... Oh, Anakin... He said such terrible things about you. Anakin smiled down at her. About me? Who would want to say bad things about me? He chuckled. Who would dare? Obi-Wan. She smeared tears from her cheeks. He said, he told me you turned to the dark side. That you murdered Jedi. Even younglings. Just having gotten the words out made her feel better. Now all she had to do was rest in his arms while he held her and hugged her and promised her he would never do anything like any of that. And she started half a smile aimed up toward his eyes. But instead of the light of love in his eyes, she saw only reflections of lava. He didn't say, I could never turn to the dark side. He didn't say, murder younglings, me, that's just crazy. He said... Obi-Wan's alive? His voice had dropped an octave and had gone colder than the chills that were spreading from the base of her spine. Yes. He said he was looking for you.
Did you tell him where I am?
No, Anakin. He wants to kill you. I didn't tell him anything. I wouldn't.
Too bad.
Anakin, what?
He's a traitor, Padme. He's an enemy of the state. He has to die.
Stop it, she said. Stop talking like that. You're frightening me.
You're not the one who needs to be afraid.
It's like... Tears brimmed again. I don't even know who you are anymore.
I'm the man who loves you, he said. But he said it through clenched teeth.
I'm the man who would do anything to protect you.
everything I have done for you.
Anakin.
Horror squeezed her voice down to a whisper, small and fragile and very young. What have you done? And she prayed that he wouldn't actually answer.
What I have done is bring peace to the Republic.
The Republic is dead, she whispered. You killed it. You and Palpatine.
It needed to die.
New tears started, but they didn't matter. She'd never have enough tears for this.
Anakin, can't we just go? Please, let's leave. Together. Today. Now. Before you. Before something happens.
Nothing will happen. Nothing can happen. Let Palpatine call himself Emperor. Let him. He can do the dirty work. All the messy, brutal oppression it'll take to unite the galaxy forever. United against him. He'll make himself into the most hated man in history. And when the time is right, we'll throw him down.
Anakin, stop. Don't you see? We'll be heroes. The whole galaxy will love us. And we will rule together.
Please stop. Anakin, please stop. I can't stand it.
He wasn't listening to her. He wasn't looking at her. He was looking past her shoulder. Feral joy burned from his eyes, and his face was no longer human.
You.
From behind her, calmly precise with that clipped Coruscanti accent, Padme, move away from him.
Obi-Wan!
She whirled, and he was on the landing ramp, still and sad.
No!
You,
growled a voice that should have been her love's.
You brought him here!
She turned back, and now he was looking at her. His eyes were full of flame.
Anakin?
Padme, move away. There was an urgency in Obi-Wan's voice that sounded closer to fear than Padme had ever heard from him. He's not who you think he is. He will harm you. Anakin's lips peeled off his teeth.
I would thank you for this, if it were a gift of love.
Trembling, shaking her head, she began to back away.
No, Anakin. No.
Palpatine was right. Sometimes it is the closest who cannot see. I loved you too much, Padme. He made a fist, and she couldn't breathe.
I loved you too much to see you. To see what you are.
A veil of red descended on the world. She clawed at her throat, but there was nothing there her hands could touch.
Let her go, Anakin.
His answer was a predator snarl over the body of its prey.
You will not take her from me.
She wanted to scream, to beg, to howl.
No, Anakin, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I love you.
But her locked throat strangled the truth inside her head, and the world veil of red smoked toward black.
Let her go. Never.
The ground fell away beneath her, and then a white flash of impact blasted her into night. In the Senate arena, lightning forked from the hands of a Sith and bent away from the gesture of a Jedi to shock Red Robes into unconsciousness. Then there were only the two of them. Their clash transcended the personal. When new lightning blazed, it was not Palpatine burning Yoda with his hate. It was the Lord of all Sith scorching the Master of all Jedi into a smoldering huddle of clothing and green flesh. 1,000 years of hidden Sith exulted in their victory.
Your time is over. The Sith rule the galaxy, now and forever.
And it was the whole of the Jedi Order that rocketed from its huddle, making of its own body a weapon to blast the Sith to the ground.
At an end your rule is, and not short enough it was, I must say.
There appeared a blade the color of life. From the shadow of a black wing, a small weapon, a holdout, an easily concealed backup, a tiny bit of treachery expressing the core of Sith mastery, slid into a withered hand and spat a flame-colored blade of its own.
When those blades met, it was more than Yoda against Palpatine, more than millennia of Sith against the legions of Jedi. This was the expression of the fundamental conflict of the universe itself. Light against dark. Winner take all. Obi-Wan knelt beside Padme's unconscious body, where she lay limp and broken in the smoky dusk. He felt for a pulse. It was thin and erratic. Anakin. Anakin, what have you done? In the Force, Anakin burned like a fusion torch. You turned her against me! Obi-Wan looked at the best friend he had ever had. You did that yourself, he said sadly. I'll give you a chance, Obi-Wan, for old time's sake. Walk away. If only I could. Go someplace out of the way. Retire. Meditate. That's what you like, isn't it? You don't have to fight for peace anymore. Peace is here. My empire is peace. Your empire. It will never have peace. It was founded on treachery and innocent blood. Don't make me kill you, Obi-Wan. If you are not with me, you are against me. Only Sith deal in absolutes, Anakin. The truth is never black and white. He rose, spreading empty hands. Let me take Padme to a med center. She's hurt, Anakin. She needs medical attention. She stays. Anakin, you don't get to take her anywhere. You don't get to touch her. She's mine, do you understand? It's your fault, all of it. You made her betray me! Anakin. Anakin's hand sprouted a bar of blue plasma. Obi-Wan sighed. He brought out his own lightsaber and angled it before him. Then I will do what I must. You'll try, Anakin said, and leapt. Obi-Wan met him in the air. Blue blades crossed, and the volcano above echoed their lightning with a shout of fire. C-3PO cautiously poked his head around the rim of the skiff's hatch. Though his threat avoidance subroutines were in full screaming overload, and all he really wanted to be doing was finding some nice dark closet in which to fold himself and power down until this was all over, preferably an armored closet with a door that locked from the inside or could be welded shut. He wasn't particular on that point. He found himself nonetheless creeping down the skiff's landing ramp into what appeared to be a perfectly appalling rain of molten lava and burning cinders, which was an entirely ridiculous thing for any sensible droid to be doing. But he kept going because he hadn't liked the sound of those conversations at all. Not one little bit. He couldn't be entirely certain what the disagreement among the humans was concerned with, but one element had been entirely clear. She's hurt, Anakin. She needs medical attention. He shuffled out into the swirling smoke. Burning rocks clattered around him. The senator was nowhere to be seen, and even if he could find her, he had no idea how he could get her back to her ship. He certainly had not been designed for transporting anything heavier than a tray of cocktails. After all, weight-bearing capability was what cargo droids were for. But through the volcano's roar and the gusts of wind, his sonoreceptors picked up a familiar Feru Hui Peru, which is auto-translation protocol converted to Don't Worry, You'll Be All Right.
R2?
C-3PO called.
R2, are you out here?
A few steps more, and C-3PO could see the little astromech. He'd tangled his manipulator arm in the senator's clothing and was dragging her across the landing deck.
R2, stop that this instant! You'll damage her!
R2-D2's dome swiveled to bring his photoreceptor to bear on the nervous protocol droid. What exactly do you suggest? It whistled.
Well, oh, all right. We'll do it together.
There came a turning point in the clash of the light against the dark. It did not come from a flash of lightning or slash of energy blade, though there were these in plenty. It did not come from a flying kick or a surgically precise punch, though these were traded too.
It came as the battle shifted from the holding office to the great chancellor's podium. It came as the hydraulic lift beneath the podium raised it on its tower of durasteel 100 meters and more, so that it became a laser point of battle, flaring at the focus of the vast emptiness of the Senate arena. It came as the force and the podium's controls ripped delegation pods free of the curving walls and made of them hammers, battering rams, catapult stones, crashing and crushing against each other in a rolling thunder roar that echoed the Senate's cheers for the galaxy's new emperor. It came when the Avatar of Light resolved into the lineage of the Jedi, when the lineage of the Jedi refined into one single Jedi. It came when Yoda found himself alone against the dark. In that lightning spear tornado of feet and fists and blades and bashing machines, his vision finally pierced the darkness that had clouded the Force. Finally, he saw the truth. This truth. That he, the Avatar of Light, supreme master of the Jedi Order, the fiercest, most implacable, most devastatingly powerful foe the darkness had ever known, just didn't have it. He'd never had it. He had lost before he started. He had lost before he was born. The Sith had changed. The Sith had grown, had adapted, had invested 1,000 years intensive study into every aspect of not only the Force, but Jedi lore itself, in preparation for exactly this day. The Sith had remade themselves. They had become new, while the Jedi had spent the last millennium training to refight the last war. The new Sith could not be destroyed with a lightsaber. They could not be burned away by any torch of the Force. The brighter his light, the darker their shadow. How could one win a war against the dark when war itself had become the dark's own weapon? He knew at that instant that this insight held the hope of the galaxy. But if he fell here, that hope would die with him. Yoda thought.
A problem this is.
Blade to blade, they were identical. After thousands of hours in lightsaber sparring, they knew each other better than brothers, more intimately than lovers. They were complementary halves of a single warrior. In every exchange, Obi-Wan gave ground. It was his way. And he knew that to strike Anakin down would burn his own heart to ash. Exchanges flashed. Leaps were sideslipped or met with flying kicks. Ankle sweeps skipped over and punches parried. The door of the control center fell in pieces, and then they were inside among the bodies. Consoles exploded in fountains of white-hot sparks as they ripped free of their moorings and hurtled through the air. Dead hands spasmed on triggers, and blaster bolts sizzled through impossibly intricate lattices of ricochet. Obi-Wan barely caught some and flipped them at Anakin. A desperation move. Anything to distract him. Anything to slow him down. Easily, contemptuously, Anakin sent them back, and the bolts flared between their blades until their galvaning faded and the particles of the packeted beams dispersed into radioactive fog.
Don't make me destroy you, Obi-Wan.
Anakin's voice had gone deeper than a well and bleak as the obsidian cliffs.
You're no match for the power of the dark side.
I've heard that before, Obi-Wan said through his teeth, parrying madly. But I never thought I'd hear it from you.
A roar of the Force blasted Obi-Wan back into a wall, smashing breath from his lungs, leaving him swaying, half-stunned. Anakin stepped over bodies and lifted his blade for the kill. Obi-Wan had only one trick left, one that wouldn't work twice, but it was a very good trick. It had, after all, worked rather splendidly on Grievous. He twitched one finger, reaching through the Force to reverse the polarity of the electrodrivers in Anakin's mechanical hand. Durasteel fingers sprang open, and a lightsaber tumbled free. Obi-Wan reached. Anakin's lightsaber twisted in the air and flipped into his hand. He poised both blades in a cross before him. The flaw of power is arrogance.
You hesitate, Anakin said. The flaw of compassion.
It's not compassion, Obi-Wan said sadly. It's reverence for life, even yours. It's respect for the man you were. He sighed. It's regret for the man you should have been.
Anakin roared and flew at him, using both the Force and his body to crash Obi-Wan back into the wall once more. His hand seized Obi-Wan's wrists with impossible strength, forcing his arms wide. I am so sick of your lectures! Dark power bore down with his grip. Obi-Wan felt the bones of his forearms bending, beginning to feather toward the green stick fractures that would come before the final breaks. Oh, he thought. Oh, this is bad.
The end came with astonishing suddenness. The Shadow could feel how much it cost the little green freak to bend back his lightnings into the cage of energy that enclosed them both. The creature had reached the limits of his strength. The Shadow released its power for an instant, long enough only to whirl away through the air and alight upon one of the delegation pods as it flew past. And the creature leapt to follow, half a second too slow. The Shadow unleashed its lightning while the creature was still in the air, and the little green freak took its full power. The shock blasted him backward to crash against the podium, and he fell. He fell a long way. The base of the arena was 100 meters below, littered with twisted scraps and jags of metal from the pods destroyed in the battle. And as the little green freak fell, finally, above, the victorious Shadow became once again only Palpatine. A very old, very tired man, gasping for air as he leaned on the pod's rail. Old he might have been, but there was nothing wrong with his eyesight. He scanned the wreckage below, and he did not see a body. He flicked a finger, and in the Chancellor's podium, a dozen meters away, a switch tripped and sirens sounded throughout the enormous building. Another surge of the Force sent his pod streaking in a downward spiral to the holding office at the base of the podium tower. Clone troops were already swarming into it. It was Yoda, he said as he swung out of the pod. Another assassination attempt. Find him and kill him. If you have to, blow up the building. He didn't have time to direct the search personally. The Force hummed a warning in his bones. Lord Vader was in danger. Mortal danger. Clones scattered. He stopped one officer. You, call the shuttle dock and tell them I'm on my way. Have my ship warmed and ready. The officer saluted, and Palpatine, with vigor that surprised even himself, ran. With the help of the Force, Yoda sprinted along the surface accessway below the arena faster than a human being could run. He sliced conduits as he passed, filling the accessway behind him with coils of high-voltage cables, twisting and spitting lightning. Every few dozen meters, he paused just long enough to slash a hole in the accessway's wall. Once his pursuers got past the cables, they would have to divide their forces to search each of his possible exits. But he knew they could afford to. There were thousands of them. He pulled his comlink from inside his robe without slowing down. The Force whispered a set of coordinates, and he spoke them into the link.
Delay not, he added. Swiftly closing is the pursuit. Failed I have, and kill me they will.
The convocation center of the Galactic Senate was a drum-mounted dome more than a kilometer in diameter. Even with the aid of the Force, Yoda was breathing hard by the time he reached its edge. He cut through the floor beneath him and dropped down into another accessway, this one used for maintenance on the huge lighting system that shone downward onto Republic Plaza through transparent steel panels that floored the underside of the huge dome's rim. He cut into the light well. The reflected wattage nearly blinded him to the vertiginous drop below the transparent steel on which he stood. Without hesitation, he cut through that as well and dived headlong into the night. K catching the nether edges of his long cloak to use as an improvised airfoil, he let the force guide him in a soaring freefall away from the convocation center. He was too small to trigger its automated defense perimeter, but the open cockpit speeder toward which he fell would get blasted from the sky if it deviated 1 meter inward from its curving course. He released his robe so that it flapped upward, making a sort of drogue that righted him in the air so that he fell feet first into the speeder's passenger seat beside Bail Organa. While Yoda strapped himself in, the senator from Alderaan pulled the rented speeder through a turn that would have impressed Anakin Skywalker and shot away toward the nearest intersection of Coruscant's congested skyways. Yoda's eyes squeezed closed. "Master Yoda, are you wounded?"
"Only my pride,"
Yoda said, and meant it. Though Bail could not possibly understand how deep that wound went, nor how it bled.
"Only my pride."
With Anakin's grip on his wrists, bending his arms near to breaking, forcing both their lightsabers down in a slow but unstoppable arc, Obi-Wan let go of everything. His hopes, his fears, his obligation to the Jedi, his promise to Qui-Gon, his failure with Anakin, and their lightsabers. Startled, Anakin instinctively shifted his force grip, releasing one wrist to reach for his blade. In that instant, Obi-Wan twisted free of his other hand and with the force caught up with his own blade, reversing it along his forearm so that his swift parry of Anakin's thundering overhand not only blocked the strike, but directed both blades to slice through the wall against which he stood. He slid Anakin's following thrust through the wall on the opposite side, guiding both blades again up and over his head in a circular sweep so that he could use the power of Anakin's next chop to drive himself backward through the wall, outside into the smoke and the falling cinders. Anakin followed, constantly attacking. Obi-Wan again gave ground, retreating along a narrow balcony high above the black sand shoreline of a lake of fire. Mustafar hummed with death behind his back, only a moment away, somewhere out there among the rivers of molten rock. Obi-Wan let Anakin drive him toward it. It was a place, he decided, they should reach together. Anakin forced him back and back, slamming his blade down with strength that seemed to flow from the volcano overhead. He spun and whirled and sliced razor-sharp shards of steel from the wall and shot them at Obi-Wan with the full heat of his fury. He slashed through a control panel along the walkway, and the ray shield that had held back the lava storm vanished. Fire rained around them. Obi-Wan back to the end of the balcony. Behind him was only a power conduit no thicker than his arm, connecting it to the main collection plant of the old lava mine, over a riverbed that flowed with white-hot molten stone. Obi-Wan stepped backward onto the conduit without hesitation, his balance flawless as he parried chop after chop. Anakin came on. Out on the tightrope of power conduit, their blades blurred even faster than before. They chopped and slashed and parried and blocked. Lava bombs thundered to the ground below, shedding drops of burning stone that scorched their robes. Smoke shrouded the planet star, and now the only light came from the hell glow of the lava below them and from their blades themselves. Flares of energy crackled and spat. This was not Sith against Jedi. This was not light against dark or good against evil. It had nothing to do with duty or philosophy, religion or morals. It was Anakin against Obi-Wan, personally. Just the two of them and the damage they had done to each other. Obi-Wan backflipped from the conduit to a coupling nexus of the main collection plant. When Anakin flew in pursuit, Obi-Wan leapt again. They spun and whirled throughout its levels, up its stairs, and across its platforms. They battled out onto the collection panels, over which the cascades of lava poured. And Obi-Wan, out on the edge of the collection panel, hunching under a curve of durasteel that splashed aside gouts of lava, deflecting force blasts and countering strikes from this creature of rage that had been his best friend, suddenly comprehended an unexpectedly profound truth. The man he faced
was everything Obi-Wan had devoted his life to destroying. Murderer, traitor, fallen Jedi, Lord of the Sith. And here and now, despite it all, Obi-Wan still loved him. Yoda had said it, flat out. Allow such attachments to pass out of one's life, a Jedi must. But Obi-Wan had never let himself understand. He had argued for Anakin, made excuses, covered for him again and again and again. All the while, this attachment he denied even feeling had blinded him to the dark path his best friend walked. Obi-Wan knew there was, in the end, only one answer for attachment. He let it go. The lake of fire, no longer held back by the ray shield, chewed away the shore on which the plant stood, and the whole massive structure broke loose, sending both warriors skidding, scrabbling desperately for handholds, down tilting durasteel slopes that were rapidly becoming cliffs. They hung from scraps of cable as the plant superstructure floated out into the lava, sinking slowly as its lower levels melted and burned away. Anakin kicked off from the toppling superstructure, swinging through a wide arc over the lava's boil. Obi-Wan shoved out and met him there, holding the cable with one hand and the Force, angling his blade high. Anakin flicked a Shien whipcrack at his knees. Obi-Wan yanked his legs high and slashed through the cable above Anakin's hand, and Anakin fell. Pockets of gas boiled to the surface of the lava, gouting flame like arms reaching to gather him in. But Anakin's momentum had already swung back toward the dissolving wreck of the collection plant, and the Force carried him within reach of another cable. Obi-Wan whipped his legs around his cable, altering its arc to bring him within reach of the one from which Anakin now dangled. But Anakin was onto this game now, and he swung cable to cable ahead of Obi-Wan's advance, using the Force to carry himself higher and higher, forcing Obi-Wan to counter by doing the same. On this terrain, altitude was everything. Simultaneous surges of the Force carried them both spinning up off the cables to the slant of the toppling superstructure's crane deck. Obi-Wan barely got his feet on the metal before Anakin pounced on him, and they stood almost toe-to-toe, blades whirling and crashing on all sides, while around them, the collection plant's maintenance droids still tinkered mindlessly away at the doomed machinery, as they would continue to do until lava closed over them and they melted to their constituent molecules and dissolved into the flow. A roar louder even than the volcano's eruption came from the river ahead. Metal began to shriek and stretch. The river dropped away in a vertical sheet of fire that vanished into boiling clouds of smoke and gases. The whole collection plant was being carried inexorably out over a vast lava fall. Obi-Wan decided he didn't really want to see what was at the bottom. He turned Anakin's blade aside with a two-handed block and landed a solid kick that knocked the two apart. Before Anakin could recover his balance, Obi-Wan took a running leap that became a graceful dive headlong off the crane deck. He hurtled down past level after level, and only a few tens of meters above the lava itself, the Force called a dangling cable to his hand, turning his dive into a swing that carried him high and far to the very limit of the cable. And he let it go. As though jumping from a swing in the temple playrooms, his velocity sent him flying up and out over a catenary arc that shot him toward the river shore. Toward, but not quite to. But the Force had led him here, and again it had not betrayed him. Below, humming along a few meters above the lava river, came a big, slow, old repulsor lift platform, carrying droids and equipment out toward a collection plant that its programming was not sophisticated enough to realize was about to be destroyed. Obi-Wan flipped in the air and let the Force bring him to a cat-footed landing. An adder-quick stab of his lightsaber disabled the platform's guidance system, and Obi-Wan was able to direct it back toward the shore with a simple shift of his weight. He turned to watch as the collection plank shrieked like the damned in a Corellian hell, crumbling over the brink of the falls until it vanished
into invisible destruction. Obi-Wan lowered his head. Goodbye, old friend. But the Force whispered a warning, and Obi-Wan lifted his head in time to see Anakin come hurtling toward him out from the boil of smoke above the falls, perched on a tiny repulsor lift droid. The little droid was vastly swifter than Obi-Wan's logy old cargo platform, and Anakin was easily able to swing around Obi-Wan and cut him off from the shore. Obi-Wan shifted weight one way, then another, but Anakin's droid was nimble as a sand panther. There was no way around, and this close to the lava, the heat was intense enough to crisp Obi-Wan's hair. "This is the end for you, Master," he said. "I wish it were otherwise." "Yes, Anakin." "So do I," Obi-Wan said, as he sprinted into a leaping dive, making a spear of his blade. Anakin leaned aside and deflected the thrust, almost contemptuously. He missed a cut at Obi-Wan's legs as the Jedi Master flew past him. Obi-Wan turned his dive into a forward roll that left him barely teetering on the rim of a low cliff, just above the soft black sand of the riverbank. Anakin snarled a curse as he realized he'd been suckered and leapt off his droid at Obi-Wan's back. Half a second too slow. Obi-Wan's world parry didn't meet Anakin's blade. It met his knee, then his other knee. And while Anakin was still in the air, burned off lower legs only starting their topple down the cliff, Obi-Wan's recovery to guard brought his blade through Anakin's left arm above the elbow. He stepped back as Anakin fell. Anakin dropped his lightsaber, clawing at the edge of the cliff with his mechanical hand, but his grip was too powerful for the lava bank, and it crumbled, and he slid down onto the black sand. His severed legs and his severed arm rolled into the lava below him and burned to ash in sudden bursts of scarlet flame. The same color, Obi-Wan observed distantly, as a Sith blade. Anakin scrabbled at the soft black sand, but struggling only made him slip farther. The sand itself was hot enough that digging his Durasteel fingers into it burned off his glove, and his robes began to smolder. Obi-Wan picked up Anakin's lightsaber. He lifted his own as well, weighing them in his hands. Anakin had based his design upon Obi-Wan's. So similar they were. So differently they had been used. "Obi-Wan!" He looked down. Flame licked the fringes of Anakin's robe, and his long hair had blackened and was beginning to char. "You were the chosen one. It was said you would destroy the Sith, not join them. It was you who would bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness. You were my brother, Anakin," said Obi-Wan Kenobi. "I loved you, but I could not save you." A flash of metal through the sky, and Obi-Wan felt the darkness closing in around them both. He knew that ship, the Chancellor's shuttle. Now, he supposed, the Emperor's shuttle. Yoda had failed. He might have died. He might have left Obi-Wan alone, the last Jedi. Below his feet, Darth Vader burst into flame.
"I hate you!" he screamed.
Obi-Wan looked down. It would be a mercy to kill him. He was not feeling merciful. He was feeling calm and clear, and he knew that to climb down to that black beach might cost him more time than he had. Another Sith Lord approached. In the end, there was only one choice. It was a choice he had made many years before, when he had passed his trials of Jedi knighthood and sworn himself to the Jedi forever. In the end, he was still Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he was still a Jedi, and he would not murder a helpless man. He would leave it to the will of the Force. He turned and walked away. After a moment, he began to run. He began to run because he realized if he was fast enough, there was one thing he could still do for Anakin. He still could do honor to the memory of the man he had loved and to the vanished order they both had served. At the landing deck, C-3PO stood on the skiff's landing ramp, waving frantically.
"Master Kenobi,
Please hurry.
Where's Padme?
Already inside, sir, but she is badly hurt.
Obi-Wan ran up the ramp to the skiff's cockpit and fired the engines. As the Chancellor's shuttle curved in toward the landing deck, the sleek, mirror-finished skiff streaked for the stars. Obi-Wan never looked back. Chapter 21. A New Jedi Order. A Naboo skiff reverted to real space and flashed toward an alien medical installation in the asteroid belt of Polis Massa. Tantive IV re-entered reality only moments behind. And on Mustafar, below the red thunder of a volcano, a Sith Lord had already snatched from sand of black glass the charred torso and head of what once had been a man, and had already leapt for the cliff bank above with effortless strength, and had already roared to his clones to bring the medical capsule immediately. The Sith Lord lowered the limbless man tenderly to the cool ground above, and laid his hand across the cracked and blackened mess that once had been his brow, and he set his will upon him.
Live, Lord Vader. Live, my apprentice. Live.
Beyond the transparent crystal of the observation dome on the airless crags of Polis Massa, the galaxy wheeled in a spray of hard, cold pinpricks through the veil of infinite night. Beneath that dome sat Yoda. He did not look at the stars. He sat a very long time. Even after nearly 900 years, the road to self-knowledge was rugged enough to leave him bruised and bleeding. He spoke softly, but not to himself. Though no one was with him, he was not alone.
My failure this was. Failed the Jedi I did.
He spoke to the Force, and the Force answered him.
Do not blame yourself, my old friend.
As it sometimes had these past 13 years, when the Force spoke to him, it spoke in the voice of Qui-Gon Jinn.
Too old I was,
Yoda said.
Too rigid, too arrogant to see that the old way is not the only way. These Jedi, I trained to become the Jedi who had trained me long centuries ago. But those ancient Jedi, of a different time they were. Changed has the galaxy. Changed the Order did not. Because let it change, I did not.
More easily said than done, my friend.
An infinite mystery is the Force.
Yoda lifted his head and turned his gaze out into the wheel of stars.
Much to learn there still is.
And you will have time to learn it.
Infinite knowledge.
Yoda shook his head.
Infinite time does that require?
With my help, you can learn to join with the Force, yet retain consciousness. You can join your light to it forever. Perhaps in time, even your physical self. Yoda did not move.
Eternal life.
The ultimate goal of the Sith, yet they can never achieve it. It comes only by the release of self, not the exaltation of self. It comes through compassion, not greed. Love is the answer to the darkness.
Become one with the Force, yet influence still to have,
Yoda mused,
a power greater than all it is.
It cannot be granted. It can only be taught. It is yours to learn, if you wish it.
Slowly, Yoda nodded.
A very great Jedi Master you have become, Qui-Gon Jinn. A very great Jedi Master you always were, but too blind I was to see it.
He rose and folded his hands before him and inclined his head in the Jedi bow of respect. The bow of the student in the presence of the Master.
Your apprentice I gratefully become.
He was well into his first lesson when the hatch cycled open behind him. He turned. In the corridor beyond stood Bail Organa. He looked stricken.
Obi-Wan is asking for you at the surgical theater, he said.
It's Padme. She's dying.
Obi-Wan sat beside her, holding one cold, still hand in both of his.
Don't give up, Padme.
Is it?
Her eyes rolled blindly.
It's a girl.
Anakin thinks it's a girl. We don't know yet. In a minute. You have to stay with us.
Below the opaque tent that shrouded her from chest down, a pair of surgical droids assisted with her labor. A general medical droid fussed and tinkered among the clutter of scanners and equipment.
If it's a girl... Oh no!
Obi-Wan cast an appeal toward the medical droid.
Can't you do something?
All organic damage has been repaired.
The droid checked another readout.
This systemic failure cannot be explained.
Not physically, Obi-Wan thought. He squeezed her hand as though he could keep life within her body by simple pressure.
Padme, you have to hold on. If it's a girl, she gasped, name her Leia.
One of the surgical droids circled out from behind the tent, cradling in its padded arms a tiny infant, already swabbed clean and breathing, but without even the hint of tears. The droid announced softly,
it's a boy.
Padme reached for him with her trembling free hand, but she had no strength to take him. She could only touch her fingers to the baby's forehead. She smiled weakly.
Luke.
The other droid now rounded the tent as well, with another clean, quietly solemn infant.
And a girl.
But she had already fallen back against her pillow.
Padme, you have twins, Obi-Wan said desperately. They need you. Please hang on.
Anakin.
Anakin isn't here, Padme, he said, though he didn't think she could hear.
Anakin, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Anakin, please. I love you.
In the Force, Obi-Wan felt Yoda's approach, and he looked up to see the ancient master beside Bail Organa, both staring the same grave question down through the surgical theater's observation panel. The only answer Obi-Wan had was a helpless shake of his head. Padme reached across with her free hand, with the hand she had laid upon the brow of her firstborn son, and pressed something into Obi-Wan's palm. For a moment, her eyes cleared, and she knew him.
Obi-Wan, there is still good in him. I know there is. Still.
Her voice faded to an empty sigh, and she sagged back against the pillow. Half a dozen different scanners buzzed with conflicting alarm tones, and the medical droids shooed him from the room. He stood in the hall outside, looking down at what she had pressed into his hand. It was a pendant of some kind, an amulet. Unfamiliar sigils carved into some sort of organic material, strung on a loop of leather. In the Force, he could feel traces of the touch of her skin. When Yoda and Bail came for him, he was still standing there, staring at it. She put this in my hand. For what seemed the dozenth time this day, he found himself blinking back tears.
And I don't even know what it is.
Precious to her, it must have been,
Yoda said slowly.
Buried with her. Perhaps it should be.
Obi-Wan looked down at the simple, childlike symbols carved into it, and felt from it in the Force soaring echoes of transcendent love and the bleak, black despair of unendurable heartbreak.
Yes, he said. Yes, perhaps that would be best.
Around a conference table on Tantive IV, Bail Organa, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Yoda met to decide the fate of the galaxy.
To Naboo, send her body.
Yoda stretched his head high, as though tasting a current in the Force.
Pregnant, she must still appear. Hidden, safe, the children must be kept. Foundation of the new Jedi Order they will be.
We should split them up, Obi-Wan said.
Even if the Sith find one, the other may survive. I can take the boy, Master Yoda, and you take the girl. We can hide them away, keep them safe, train them as Anakin should have been trained.
No.
The ancient master lowered his head again, closing his eyes, resting his chin on his hands that were folded over the head of his stick. Obi-Wan looked uncertain. But how are they to learn the self-discipline a Jedi needs? How are they to master skills of the Force?
Jedi training, the sole source of self-discipline is not. When right is the time for skills to be taught, to us, the living Force will bring them. Until then, wait we will, and watch and learn.
I can... Bail Organa stopped, flushing slightly. I'm sorry to interrupt, Masters. I know little about the Force, but I do know something of love. The Queen and I, well, we've always talked of adopting a girl. If you have no objection, I would like to take Leia to Alderaan and raise her as our daughter. She would be loved with us. Yoda and Obi-Wan exchanged a look. Yoda tilted his head.
No happier fate could any child ask for. With our blessing and that of the Force, let Leia be your child.
Bail stood, a little jerkily, as though he simply could no longer keep his seat. His flush had turned from embarrassment to pure, uncomplicated joy. Thank you, Masters. I don't know what else to say. Thank you, that's all. What of the boy? Kleeg Law still lives on Tatooine, I think. And Anakin's stepbrother. Owen, that's it. And his wife, Beru, still work the moisture farm outside Mos Eisley.
As close to kinfolk as the boy can come,
Yoda said approvingly.
But Tatooine, not like Alderaan it is, deep in the Outer Rim, a wild and dangerous planet.
Anakin survived it, Obi-Wan said. Luke can too. And I can, well, I could take him there and watch over him, protect him from the worst of the planet's dangers, until he can learn to protect himself.
Like a father you wish to be, young Obi-Wan?
More an eccentric old uncle, I think. It is a part I can play very well. To keep watch over Anakin's son. Obi-Wan sighed, finally allowing his face to register a suggestion of his old gentle smile. I can't imagine a better way to spend the rest of my life.
Settled it is, then. To Tatooine, you will take him.
Bail moved toward the door. If you'll excuse me, Masters, I have to call the Queen. He stopped in the doorway, looking back. Master Yoda, do you think Padme's twins will be able to defeat Palpatine?
Strong the Force runs in the Skywalker line. Only hope we can. Until the time is right, disappear we will.
Bail nodded. And I must do the same, metaphorically at least. You may hear disturbing things about what I do in the Senate. I must appear to support the new Empire and my comrades with me. It was Padme's wish, and she was a shrewder political mind than I'll ever be. Please trust that what we do is only a cover for our true task. We will never betray the legacy of the Jedi. I will never surrender the Republic to the Sith.
Trust in this, we always will. Go now. For happy news, your queen is waiting.
Bail Organa bowed and vanished into the corridor. When Obi-Wan moved to follow, Yoda's gimmer stick barred his way.
A moment, Master Kenobi. In your solitude on Tatooine, training I have for you. I and my new master.
Obi-Wan blinked. Your new master?
Yes.
Yoda smiled up at him.
And your old one.
C-3PO shuffled along the starship's hallway beside R2-D2, following Senator Organa, who had, by all accounts, inherited them both.
I'm certain I can't say why she malfunctioned,
he was telling the little astromech.
Organics are so terribly complicated, you know.
Ahead, the senator was met by a man whose uniform C-3PO's confirmation recognition algorithm informed him, indicated he was a captain in the Royal Alderaan Civil Fleet.
I'm placing these droids in your care, the senator said.
Have them cleaned, polished, and refitted with the best of everything. They will belong to my new daughter.
How lovely!
C-3PO exclaimed.
His daughter is the child of Master Anakin and Senator Amidala,
he explained to R2-D2.
I can hardly wait to tell her all about her parents. I'm sure she will be very proud.
Oh, and the protocol droid? Senator Organa said thoughtfully. Have its mind wiped. The captain saluted.
Oh,
said C-3PO.
Oh, dear.
In the newly renamed Emperor Palpatine Surgical Reconstruction Center on Coruscant, a hyper-sophisticated prototype Ubrickian DD-13 surgical droid moved away from the project that it and an enhanced FX-6 medical droid had spent many days rebuilding. It beckoned to a dark-robed shadow that stood at the edge of the pool of high-intensity light.
My lord, the construction is finished. He lives.
Good. Good. The shadow flowed into the pool of light as though the overhead illuminators had malfunctioned. Droid stepped back as it came to the rim of the surgical table. On the table was strapped the very first patient of the N-Pal Su Recon Center. To some eyes, it might have been a pieced-together hybrid of droid and human, encased in a life-support shell of gleaming black, managed by a thoracic processor that winked pale color against the shadow's cloak. To some eyes, its jointed limbs might have looked ungainly, clumsy, even monstrous. The featureless curves of black that served it for eyes might have appeared inhuman, and the underthrust grillwork of its vocabulator might have suggested the jaws of a saurian predator built of polished blast armor. But to the shadow, it was glorious. A magnificent jewel box created both to protect and to exhibit the greatest treasure of the Sith. Terrifying. Mesmerizing. Perfect. The table slowly rotated to vertical, and the shadow leaned close. Lord Vader. Lord Vader. Can you hear me? This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker forever. The first dawn of light in your universe brings pain. The light burns you. It will always burn you. Part of you will always lie upon black glass sand beside a lake of fire, while flames chew upon your flesh. You can hear yourself breathing. It comes hard and harsh, and it scrapes nerves already raw, but you cannot stop it. You can never stop it. You cannot even slow it down. You don't even have lungs anymore. Mechanisms hardwired into your chest breathe for you. They will pump oxygen into your bloodstream forever. Lord Vader, Lord Vader, can you hear me? And you can't. Not in the way you once did. Sensors in the shell that prisons your head trickle meaning directly into your brain. You open your scorched pale eyes. Optical sensors integrate light and shadow into a hideous simulacrum of the world around you. Or perhaps the simulacrum is perfect, and it is the world that is hideous. Padme, are you here? Are you all right? You try to say. But another voice speaks for you. Out from the vocabulator that serves you for burned away lips and tongue and throat.
Padme, are you here? Are you all right?
I'm very sorry, Lord Vader. I'm afraid she died. It seems in your anger, you killed her. This burns hotter than the lava had.
No, no, it is not possible.
You loved her. You will always love her. You could never will her death. Never. But you remember. You remember all of it. You remember the dragon that you brought Vader forth from your heart to slay. You remember the cold venom in Vader's blood. You remember the furnace of Vader's fury and the black hatred of seizing her throat to silence her lying mouth. And there is one blazing moment in which you finally understand that there was no dragon, that there was no Vader, that there was only you, only Anakin Skywalker, that it was all you, is you, only you. You did it. You killed her. You killed her because finally, when you could have saved her, when you could have gone away with her, when you could have been thinking about her, you were thinking about yourself. It is in this blazing moment that you finally understand the trap of the dark side, the final cruelty of the Sith. Because now yourself is all you will ever have. And you rage and scream and reach through the Force to crush the shadow who has destroyed you. But you are so far less now than what you were. You are more than half machine. You are like a painter gone blind, a composer gone deaf. You can remember where the power was, but the power you can touch is only a memory. And so with all your world-destroying fury, it is only droids around you that implode, and equipment, and the table on which you were strapped shatters. And in the end, you cannot touch the shadow. In the end, you do not even want to. In the end, the shadow is all you have left. Because the shadow understands you. The shadow forgives you. The shadow gathers you unto itself. And within your furnace heart, you burn in your own flame. This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker. Forever. The long night has begun. Huge, solemn crowds line Palace Plaza in Theed, the capital of Naboo, as six beautiful white Gualars draw a flower-draped open casket bearing the remains of a beloved senator through the triumphal arch, her fingers finally and forever clasping a snippet of Jaipur, one that had been carved long ago by the hand of a 9-year-old boy from an obscure desert planet in the far outer rim. On the jungle planet of Dagobah, a Jedi master inspects the unfamiliar swamp of his exile. From the bridge of a Star Destroyer, two Sith lords stand with a sector governor named Tarkin and survey the growing skeleton of a spherical battle station the size of a moon. But even in the deepest night, there are some who dream of dawn. On Alderaan, the prince consort delivers a baby girl into the loving arms of his queen. And on Tatooine, a Jedi master brings an infant boy to the homestead of Owen and Beru Lars. Then he rides his Eopie off into the Jundland wastes, toward the setting suns. The dark is generous, and it is patient, and it always wins. But in the heart of its strength lies weakness. One lone candle is enough to hold it back. Love is more than a candle. Love can ignite the stars. This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, by Matthew Stover, based on the story and screenplay by George Lucas. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2005. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2005, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved. Part 1. Victory. The dark is generous, Its first gift is concealment. Our true faces lie in the dark beneath our skins. Our true hearts remain shadowed deeper still. But the greatest concealment lies not in protecting our secret truths, but in hiding from us the truths of others. The dark protects us from what we dare not know. Its second gift is comforting illusion, the ease of gentle dreams in night's embrace, the beauty that imagination brings to what would repel in day's harsh light. But the greatest of its comforts is the illusion that the dark is temporary, that every night brings a new day, because it is day that is temporary. Day is the illusion. Its third gift is the light itself. As days are defined by the nights that divide them, as stars are defined by the infinite black through which they wheel, the dark embraces the light and brings it forth from the center of its own self. With each victory of the light, it is the dark that wins.